Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcast.
Hey, y'all, it's Rima. So this week, I'm handing the reins over to our producer, Peter Balanon-Rosen. I don't want to tell you too much about this story before we get into it. Just know that it's one of those stories with good guys, bad guys, and people caught in between. Okay, here's Peter.
Let's see here. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you quite well, please.
The other week, I had this video call. Now, it's 2022, believe me, I'm no stranger to video calls. But this was different. The person I talked to is so protective about her identity that it was a cameras off, only talk from an encrypted device, no real names affair.
Hey, I'm playing with criminals all day long. You will be careful as well in my place, right?
Well, I have you logged in here as Carrie. I guess I'll just call you Carrie.
Sure.
Okay, cool. All right. So yeah, well, okay, Carrie. Carrie, who plays with criminals all day long. This I was able to get out of her. She grew up behind the Iron Curtain, now lives somewhere in Central Europe. She's in her 50s, and she's the type of nerd who considers Dune a holy text. Carrie tells me at one point she had all the Dune books on display, next to Batman, Catwoman, and Harley Quinn action figures. She's also always loved space shows and Star Wars.
Science fiction, it's a way of helping you to open your mind to unexpected things and to discover things about yourself. It was a time when being a nerd was a stigma. Now, hey, I'm proud to be part of this.
Now, Carrie's story doesn't start a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. It starts just over a decade ago in Central Europe. She'd moved for love.
I was convinced that I have the perfect marriage until my ex-husband decided that he can have a perfect marriage with someone else.
It felt like a huge betrayal. He left her after 14 years.
I was quite devastated, to be honest with you, because you are in a foreign country. You are not young anymore. You don't have friends, you don't have family, you don't have no one near you.
Carrie barely knew the local language. Basic conversations were a challenge. Instead, she'd wander solo down city streets and through parks, trying to wear herself out.
Just to keep myself moving and to get enough tired for sleep, to be honest.
Her sci-fi books, Dune, Philip K. Dick novels, Fahrenheit 451, they provided brief, necessary escapes from her own life.
It's creating a fake reality cocoon to help me move ahead.
Eventually, Carrie's friends from back home were like, you gotta snap out of this. Come back to the real world.
They came with the idea with, hey, how about if you join a dating site? To be honest with you, I was quite apprehensive about it.
Why is that?
Because I wasn't liking very much the idea of dating online.
But her friends convinced her, just talk to another human. It doesn't have to be serious. It'll be good for you. So Carrie made a profile on this site called Badu and picked where potential matches could be.
It was worldwide.
Worldwide, okay.
Yeah, as long as we only talk and it's only online, it's no danger.
Almost immediately, the messages flooded in.
Well, I was shocked and surprised because, let me tell you something, I am not Cindy Crawford or Julia Roberts or something like that. And to have tons of guys jumping on you in chat and telling you how beautiful you are and how amazing you are, and that was the innocent part of it.
There were guys saying romantic things, like how they wanted to watch the sunrise with her. And other guys saying unromantic things, like exactly what they wanted to do to her until sunrise. But in between those guys, there was John.
He's 47 years old and he's from Los Angeles, California, but he's living in Iraq and he's US military, part of the peacekeeping force in Iraq.
John, this military guy in Iraq, had totally regular things to say. Like, how are you? Where are you from? After a few exchanges, he did the online equivalent of, let's get out of here, go somewhere a little more quiet.
He was saying, you know something, how about if we move on Yahoo?
They moved onto Yahoo Messenger. John said he couldn't use a webcam or phone to call from his military base for security reasons. So over the next few weeks, they messaged and emailed instead. John sent photos, brown hair, crew cut, military garb, straight-faced, but with warm eyes. And Carrie felt he was genuinely interested in her. They'd message and email, Carrie sitting at her desk, with John asking her about the sci-fi she was reading, how she was sleeping, whether she wanted a family.
A lot of things that, let's be honest, in my real life, no one ever asked about.
Yeah, that's like really kind and like caring.
Yeah.
The problem was John's son, Felix. John couldn't communicate with Felix while out on combat missions, so he asked if Carrie could.
He was on the front. The kid was somewhere else. So, yeah, I was a little moved by his story.
And if Carrie thought John was nice, well, she really fell for his son, Felix. Felix was 14, living with a caretaker in Ghana. And emailing with Felix, Carrie learned he was a lot like her. They were both in foreign lands, both far from family, both in need of a friend. Felix told Carrie about how he was lonely at school, the girls he liked, how he missed his dad. He even started calling Carrie mom. And to Carrie, that felt huge. It wasn't just that she'd hit it off with John's kid. It tapped into this vision she'd always had for her life.
I tried to have children before and it wasn't working for me, so I imagine that I can maybe have a life where my life partner has a son of his own and I can consider him my son as well without any problems.
It was like a dream come true. And Carrie was so in love with this dream that she didn't bat an eye when the money stuff started. It was a sunny afternoon a few weeks after Carrie and John first started talking. Carrie was sitting at her desk.
When John told me, you know, Friday, end of the week, as it be, it's Felix's birthday.
Oh, okay.
And how about if you buy him a gift to make him feel that you accepted him as your son?
And John had the perfect idea for a gift, an iPhone.
I told him, you know something, it's a little expensive. And, well, John was saying, of course, it's expensive where you are living, but if you send him the money, he can buy it cheaper in Ghana.
John said all Carrie had to do was wire 1,000 euros to Felix's caretaker via Western Union. The money would cover the phone, plus a big birthday party with cake, balloons, food. Now, let's think about this for a sec. A guy Carrie had never met, who she'd only ever talked to via email and messenger, asked her to send money to his son, who she'd also never met. Most people might think, this sounds kind of scammy. But not Carrie. She was thinking about Felix, a son she'd never had.
I was thinking that the poor boy is alone in a different country, exactly as I am, is having just one person taking care of him. And yeah, it's his birthday. He deserves to have a gift.
At the time, Carrie had about 2,500 euros in savings. And spending some on Felix felt worth it. She rushed to Western Union to wire the money.
Just to know that that poor kid is having his birthday and he's happy, it was amazing.
And, of course, the money stuff only picked up from there. Carrie was just getting home from work shortly after Felix's birthday when she saw all these emails from Michael, Felix's caretaker. He wrote, Felix had fallen down the stairs, hit his head, and was now in the hospital, needing surgery. But conveniently, Michael couldn't get in touch with Felix's dad because John was out on a combat mission, and the doctors needed to be paid 2,000 euros up front to operate.
I freaked out, of course.
Carrie wrote back, there's no way I can cover all of that, but I could send like 700. Michael was like, cool, do that. I'll figure something out.
So rush again to Western Union, send 700 and hope for the best. Then what happens next? While in hospital, trying to recover after surgery, Felix got cholera.
Which, of course, meant more money. Michael told Carrie the only treatment available was across the continent from Ghana in South Africa.
But to move Felix to South Africa, they need 3,000 euros.
Carrie, concerned for Felix, scrambled to read whatever she could find online about cholera in Ghana. And she came across this article saying something that stopped her in her tracks.
The government in Ghana offers free treatment.
Free treatment?
Yeah. And that was the moment when all my alarm bells start ringing.
Sitting there, staring at her screen, Carrie felt like her heart stopped.
I was shaking.
And Carrie started to rethink all these little things. Things that should have been red flags. About John, the guy she'd been talking to for weeks and weeks. Like how they'd only ever spoken by email and messenger. She'd never seen his face. And how he said he also liked sci-fi, but didn't know any of the classics.
For example, Dune. He never read it. Then Blade Runner was a huge movie and he never heard of.
Either sci-fi sacrilege or something wasn't right. Carrie wondered, could John be lying about everything?
Doing the rounds and checking online and trying to understand what the hell I got myself into, I found an article about military people being impersonated online.
Carrie scrolled through the entire article. She even read what people were saying in the comments.
Talking about military guys they met online and the money they lost because of those guys and how they believe that they will build a family together and... yeah. Your entire world, it's turning upside down and everything that you believed you know start to become something else. I realize that something is happening that I don't understand and I need more information about it.
And so, searching online to learn whatever she could about scams and scammers, Carrie came across a group of people known as scam baiters. These people who crusade across the internet and deliver their own version of street justice to scammers. Think Batman, but instead of mask and cape, it's username and keyboard. People who hide their identities and pretend to fall for scams in order to mess with and expose scammers as a hobby. And it wasn't just one person or one site. It was this whole online community tucked in the shadows of the internet. Message boards and blogs full of self-proclaimed anti-scam warriors.
I was checking a lot of them, reading everything that I can read to understand what is going on because my mind was blown away.
And reading through all these scam baiting forums, Carrie picked up some practical tips, like how to take any random email and figure out the IP address and location it originally came from. It's actually surprisingly simple. It turns out every email is kind of like a letter sent through the mail. It comes with these stamps all over it. There's a stamp for where the email started, a stamp for where it ended, and stamps for anywhere it's been in between. And all that information is encoded into what's called an email header. This source code that, to the untrained eye, looks like gibberish.
But in that list of gibberish, you have relevant information about the place where that email was sent.
And if you plug that header code into an online IP tracker, something you can easily Google and find, you can learn everything about where an email came from. So one day, after work, Carrie sat down at her computer, pulled up an email from John, supposedly sent from a military base in Iraq, and plugged his info into an IP tracker.
I was giving an IP that was from a mobile phone in Accra, Ghana.
Accra, the capital of Ghana.
In that moment, I realized that, yeah, no way my John is the real John. But hey, at least Felix might be real, so go and check Felix.
In all of Felix's emails from the supposed 14-year-old, from the exact same IP address as John.
I was speechless for a while, looking at my screen and trying to understand what the hell. I'm living a fake romance, and not only that it's a fake romance that I am paying for.
Carrie had given them more than half her savings. 1,700 euros. At that time, she was living paycheck to paycheck. And Carrie felt sick, not only because of John or the money, but because of herself. It was like she'd been paying to live an illusion, paying to feel loved.
I was feeling like a fool, and I was feeling angry at myself, because that makes you reevaluate entirely who you really are.
And at this point, Carrie could have cursed John out, blocked him, moved on. But instead, she got curious and made a decision.
That no matter what, I will not send them any more money, but I will keep the contact to see how the things are going.
Interesting. Okay. Why?
Because I try to understand, and I try to figure it out who is behind and why.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I was curious to see how far they will go.
And with that, they delivered in the scammiest of ways. When Carrie said she couldn't pay for the cholera treatment, what do you know? Felix recovered. After that, John told Carrie he wanted Felix to go live with her and asked for cash for travel documents. When Carrie said no, a lawyer emailed Carrie saying Felix had come into an inheritance. They just needed Carrie's help paying for some legal fees. When Carrie hesitated there, John said he magically found over $1 million while out on a military mission, which he was sending to Carrie. She just had to pay for its delivery. All these little miracles that set her up to hand over money.
Step by step, he was confirming with each and every message that he is nothing but a scammer.
Yeah, honestly, it sounds like exhausting getting asked for money left and right, left and right.
Yeah, to be honest with you, it was obviously for me that this lie doesn't work. We will use another lie, we will use another lie, and we will use another lie.
6 months after first meeting John, Carrie had enough.
I decided that it's time for the romance to end.
Carrie sat down at the same desk where she'd sent flirty messages to John, where she'd confided how much she liked Felix, and wrote an email saying something very different.
That I know that he is lying to me, and I want to know why.
And Carrie got a reply, basically saying, okay, yeah, you're totally right. But scamming you, doing all this, it made me catch feelings.
The last message is, I am very sorry to be frank. I love you and hope to move forward with you. It's because of a hardship which made me to hurt you, but I love you now and hope to meet you one day.
And how do you feel when you see that?
I was pissed. That was the moment when I stopped everything and I blocked him everywhere.
Carrie didn't want to give John the satisfaction of getting any reaction, or give him any glimmer of hope he could rope her back in. And so she took things a step further.
I reported him publicly.
Carrie went on to one of those anti-scam message boards and posted John's messages, his IP address, the destination for the money requests, everything she had on him and Felix, as this public warning to others. And posting all that, she expected a feeling of triumph, of joy from sweet, sweet revenge. But instead, all she could hear was her own voice in the back of her head.
Telling me that I'm a fool and I'm an idiot and I deserve what is happening to me. And that was just pushing me down more and more and more. I was doubting my own judgment. I was doubting myself. And I was feeling that no matter what I'm doing, every time when I choose something, it's ending bad.
Her husband, who she'd followed to another country, left her after 14 years. Everything about John and Felix, all a lie. Carrie thought maybe a normal, happy life just wasn't in the cards for her.
I was feeling bad about myself.
She started isolating herself from others, stopped cooking, stopped cleaning. Instead, fast food bags and candy wrappers littered the apartment, making the bed no longer felt worth it. She even stopped reading her beloved sci-fi novels.
Even if you want to enjoy things that were making you happy before, you cannot. There's a shadow about everything and above everything. And I was just wondering if there is any way in this life I can deserve someone honest.
But there was one thing that did feel worthwhile. See, back when Carrie first discovered those scam-baiting websites, she started spending a lot of time in this anonymous chat room, a place where scam victims could come, ask for help, and talk about what was going on. Carrie was there, not as a victim, but as someone who could help others find information and confirm whether something was actually a scam.
I was having the feeling that helping them helps me understand what I am dealing with.
And so, rather than saying I'm done with scams and scammers and everything they represent, like I might have done, rather than moving on with her life scarred and skeptical of others, rather than just walking away feeling down about herself and the lot she'd been dealt in life, Carrie went the opposite direction. She decided a wrong had been done to her, and she was gonna right it. Not just for herself, but to rescue others from also being deceived, manipulated, and robbed. She made the choice to go even deeper into the world of scammers, to walk into the belly of the beast on an undercover mission to fight scammers head on. But sometimes, in the heat of battle, you can lose yourself. That's after a break.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.
On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, "Sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough." This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.
Okay, so first thing you gotta do if you're gonna take on scammers is, like any superhero, come up with a name for your crime-fighting persona. And Carrie, staying very on brand, turned to sci-fi for inspiration.
My online persona is Firefly.
Firefly, also the name of a cult sci-fi western TV series set in the year 2517. And Carrie, as Firefly, set off on a journey that would take her deep into the anti-scam world. Her first stop, that victim support chat room, where Carrie helped people figure out if they were being scammed. It became a regular fixture in her life. She'd sit in her apartment late nights, face buried in her laptop, messaging victims, and chain smoking.
Usually when I'm online, I smoke a lot. I don't smoke when I'm away from my computer.
Oh, all right. Some people are social smokers. You are a computer smoker.
Well, makes sense knowing what I'm doing for fun, yeah.
For fun, because this was a hobby, not any sort of paid job. And in this chat room, Carrie talked to romance scam victims, blackmail scam victims, business owners who'd sent money to scammers filing fake invoices, people who'd lost money to scammers pretending to be delivery services, and people like her, who'd also talked to their scammer's supposed kid and lawyer and friends.
Something was dying inside me every time when I was talking with someone, not sure if it's scammed or not, and I was able to tell them, yes, you are scammed, look here. Same pictures used on other 10 profiles, same email address used with different identities online. But in the same time, it was helping me to rebuild my trust in people, because I was able to show them that not anything online is fake. And not anyone online is after your money.
As Carrie talked to victim after victim, she realized something.
On one side of the screen, you have the victim, and on the other side of the screen, you have an entire army of people working to scam you.
Scammers, it turns out, are often way more than just one person. There's this whole operation where there's one person whose job it is to rope the victim in, then someone else whose job it is to flirt, and then someone else who does the big ask and actually requests the money, plus a boss of sorts overseeing everything.
He's not directly involved. He's just distributing the work and getting the biggest part of the cash.
Wait, so if I'm just picturing this, it almost kind of sounds like a corporate environment, right?
Yes.
Where you have like the entry-level people, you have their managers, and then you have like the CEO at the top?
Yes.
Carrie decided the best way to fight back was to expose these pseudo-organizations. She'd get information from victims and then publicly publish on a website the emails, the bank accounts, the pictures, the phone numbers, the messages used to rope victims in, and anything else used by scammers to make scammers' lives a bit harder and to reach potential victims before they sent money.
It's becoming frustrating because it doesn't matter what you are doing and how much you are exposing, there will always be victims, more as you can handle.
Now, Carrie, as Firefly, had befriended other regulars on these anti-scam message boards. She told them she didn't want to just console victims. She wanted to stop people from ever becoming victims in the first place.
And they encouraged me to start baiting.
Baiting. Scam baiting. To become one of those people who pretends to fall for scams in order to directly get information about scammers and their tactics. But Carrie didn't know if she was up for that, because what Carrie saw of that world, she wasn't sure if scam baiters were actually good guys.
There were communities of people considering the scammers their pets.
Hmm.
And you play with your pet and anything goes.
You might know a version of these folks from YouTube.
Today we are exposing scammers.
I had an entire scam center convinced that I was an old lady.
Not one, not two, but six scammers from the same...
These guys that mess with scammers.
I'm going to be connecting two scammers to each other.
Sometimes hacking scammers' computers or convincing scammers to do embarrassing things. The recipe.
I replied to this one when you sent me a topless pic.
One thing that I didn't like very, very much was a thing called Safari.
It's a game where baiters compete to see who can make a scammer travel the farthest, often across international borders or into war zones, by promising scammers there's money waiting.
Or you make a scammer build a church from sandbags.
This actually happened. A few years back, baiters convinced a scammer he'd get hundreds of thousands of dollars if he built a monument out of 8,000 pounds of sandbags and then traveled to the Sahara Desert for a fake conference. When the scammer went, he got stranded and went days without food.
I don't want a scammer dead. I want a scammer in jail for what he has done.
But Carrie's friends from the forums were like, well, you could be what's called an ethical baiter.
An ethical baiter, it's a person interacting with the scammer, wasting the scammer time as much as possible to keep him away from real victims. And in the meantime, gathering information about the scammer and the scam infrastructure used in that particular scam.
Nothing illegal, nothing to try and hurt the scammer. A way to step in where authorities often can't or won't, and flag scammers to banks, dating sites, and officials. And Carrie... she liked the sound of that.
That was the moment when I decided to become a scam baiter.
And going with what you know, Carrie decided to focus on romance scammers. Her first task, figure out her approach.
You want to be a honey trap or you want to be a vinegar trap?
Wait, say that again?
You want to be a honey trap or you want to be a vinegar trap?
A honey trap or a vinegar trap? She tells me honey trap is where you go on a dating site, act kind of sweet, kind of plain, in order to lure a scammer in. And a vinegar trap, well, that's the total opposite. You act like someone only a scammer would go after.
Someone so horrible that no normal, decent human will ever contact on a dating site.
Can I just say I love that term, vinegar trap?
Yeah, well, that's the term.
Carrie decided she wanted to see what it'd be like to get scammed as a guy. And first, she was gonna go honey trap. Kinda plain, kinda boring.
My first persona was 56 years old, divorced, bald, drinking a lot of beer, and searching for his other half.
Carrie made sure her laptop was encrypted and untraceable, and then went looking for love in all the wrong places. These free dating sites with bad security. Places known for scammers. And it was as if her bald, beer-drinking man was GQ's sexiest man of the year. The messages came pouring in. The first one was from a scammer claiming to be an heiress trapped in a refugee camp.
Her father left a fortune, and if I can help her get that money in my bank account, she will come to join me and live happily forever.
Before long, Carrie was getting 5 or 6 messages like that a day. She never reached out to anyone first. They came to her. She'd play along with every single one, sitting at her desk, chain-smoking.
I never interacted with them first. I never winked, I never smiled at them, nothing. I just sit there waiting for them to contact me.
Carrie saw that scammers from different parts of the world came with these different schemes. There were the scammers from Ukraine, pretending to be beautiful women, who'd start messaging you, then always want you to pay for a translation service they were using. Scammers in Ghana, pretending to be porn stars, always ready to sell gold and land to come live with you. And Russian scammers, who'd make plans to travel to meet you, but then always get arrested at the airport and always need you to bail them out. And you're seeing all this with just that one guy account that you make?
Yep. In the meantime, I decided to be a female as well.
And this time, Carrie went full on vinegar.
She was a heavy smoker, a heavy drinker, and she was not attractive at all.
Carrie used this picture from a meme going around. Lady with pink star-shaped glasses, super messy hair, and teeth edited to look like a rabbit.
Yeah, she was a star.
I gotta ask, did it feel hypocritical at all to be setting up these accounts, pretending to be someone you're not?
No, as long as you didn't interact with real people.
She figured she's being fake, they're being fake, it's even. And it's not that Carrie would just troll the scammers. She'd gather info about their emails, the initial messages they sent, the personas they used, and post them on message boards. Plus, she and other scam baiters would flag to banks, wire transfers, and accounts used in scams, even getting some shut down. Keeping scammers interested without sending money turned into this game of sorts.
That's when the fun starts.
Carrie wouldn't tell me her exact strategy, in case many scammers are listening here, but it could be like, write me 20 love poems, then I'll definitely send the money. Or, oh no, my car died on the way to the bank. Or, whoops, my grandma flushed my credit card down the toilet. But not everything went as planned.
I end up with my very first death threat.
Carrie was baiting a scammer who used a different email with every victim. So when Carrie exposed him, he knew exactly who was behind it.
In that case, he promised that he will find me and he will put a bullet in my head if he's finding me.
So, oh God, how did that feel?
Yeah, well, I was laughing. He wasn't who he pretended to be, so telling me that he will put the FBI after me and he will execute me and giving me details on how he will be doing it, it was hilarious.
But was there a small part of you that was a little worried?
No. The danger is real if you give them the chance, but you don't give them that chance.
Which is why, even today, Carrie won't tell me her real name or where she lives. I get it, though. These scam organizations are full-on criminal enterprises, and Carrie's messing with their money. But Carrie also had this other problem. Before she knew it, Carrie was talking to 100 scammers, playing out 100 different storylines, all at the same time. Talking to every scammer that reached out was taking over her life.
You barely have time to eat, to sleep. And it's becoming frustrating after a while because you became an extension of your computer. And that's a problem when you really want to not forget yourself into your online persona, not to get lost.
Carrie was spending way more time writing emails as a fake person than as herself. She was pulling all-nighters to message scammers 10, 12 hours at a time, then rushing home from her 9-to-5 office job to do it all again.
I was so obsessed at that time because I imagined that if I am enough persistent, if I am enough dedicated, if I do the things in the right way, sooner or later, I will be able to make a difference.
But it seemed no matter how many scammers she roped in and gathered info about, published info about, there was always another one around the corner. It was as if she'd come this deep into the scamming world, only for it to swallow her whole. And so desperately searching for a way to be more efficient, to get some of her life back. One day, sitting at her desk, Carrie had this light bulb moment about scammers.
They are all over the damn place, but they end up all in the same point, and that's fake sites.
In a lot of the scams, scammers went out of their way to make websites to back up their stories. Like if a scammer was pretending to be a CEO, their fake company would have a fake website to fake prove that, yes, they are the CEO of an important company. Plus fake banks, fake shipping services, fake lawyers, all with their own websites.
So I decided to pay more attention to the infrastructure that they are using and to see who is behind that.
And as she did, she could tell across various scams, there were different websites made by the same person. Sites with the same layout, the same blue background, the same spinning globe icon in the corner. Carrie wondered, if she could knock out these similar looking sites, could that stop multiple scams in progress? It seemed crazy enough, it might just work. So Carrie rounded up some other baiters to work together to find scam websites that looked the same. And they started with sites with that spinning globe in the corner.
And we identified 120 fake couriers.
120 websites, all seemingly made by the same person, all used in fake delivery scams.
It was scary because each and every of those sites had between 250 and 300 victims each.
Each?
Yes.
But it also felt like a key, a way she could do a strategic strike on a group of scammers. And so for the first time since she started scam baiting, Carrie switched up tactics. Instead of waiting for scammers to find her on dating sites, she was going to go after them directly. Carrie and the other scam baiters took all the information they dug up and reported it to the site's registrar, a business like GoDaddy that hosts websites. And at the same time, boom, all 120 suspended.
That was feeling like a victory, and I was quite happy about it because I imagine that's the end of it.
But then, just a few months later, sites made by the same person with the same spinning globe were popping up again. People in the scam baiting world actually have a term for people who make these fake sites. They call them faker makers.
We suspended everything this faker maker created 5 times in a row.
Oh, it kind of feels like playing like internet whack-a-mole. Like as soon as something pops up, you can whack it once, but it'll pop up again.
Yeah.
But Carrie realized she could go even farther. At the time, whenever someone registered a domain name, they needed to provide a valid address, phone number, and email. Information that could lead to the real-life people behind scamming websites. People like her elusive faker maker.
We identified him. He was a Nigerian living in Malaysia. By the look of it, he lost the trust of his employer.
Carrie says it's a small victory. She expects his websites to pop back up. But when that happens, she'll be watching and waiting. In the meantime, she's chasing down people behind all the other fake scam websites out there. Switching up tactics, focusing on fake sites rather than hundreds of individual scammers, gave Carrie something important. Time. Time to focus on her own life again.
I learned to disconnect. Just take a step back and stay away from everything serious for a few days. I'm going to watch movies, I'm going to see concerts, things that are making me happy.
Which is how recently Carrie met a cute guy. She was out at this rock concert in her city.
I was singing and clapping myself and I became aware of a disturbance somewhere around me.
She looked over, saw this guy belting along to the band, wearing a blue t-shirt and jeans, huge smile on his face.
He was singing so false, unbelievable, but with such a conviction.
Oh, he wasn't nailing it. It didn't sound that good?
But it was hilarious and funny, and I start laughing, and he realized that I'm laughing, and we start talking, and yeah, we went for a coffee after that.
And the conversation felt refreshing. They've been seeing each other for a few months now.
It's pleasant to be yourself and not pretend to be someone else.
And you're sure he's real?
More than sure, yes.
And how does he feel about you being a scam baiter?
Well, he doesn't know the details of what I'm doing online.
He doesn't know?
No.
Oh, interesting. Why keep it a secret?
Because it's part of my life that is not involving real life, and he's having nothing to do with it.
Hmm. Are you worried that it would be like a turnoff?
No, I'm not. Just, it's refreshing to be yourself from time to time.
Sure.
And it's giving me energy for what I am doing, because if you don't have a strong foundation in your real life, you cannot do what we are doing every day.
And in the anti-scam world, Carrie recently had a few victories. In 2020, her and other scam baiters got a slew of scammers shut down who were selling fake masks and ventilators. She's seen scammers stop using bank accounts she and other baiters have flagged. And of course, she's been able to take down plenty of fake sites. It's this whole heroic secret identity. Do you like the scam baiter version of yourself better than the real one? Like, you're kind of like this secret kind of, I don't know, vigilante that other people don't know about in the
real world. I hate that term, sorry to say it, Peter.
Which term,
sorry? Vigilante, it's someone taking the law in their own hands.
You don't think that's you?
No. I don't consider myself a vigilante, and I will never consider myself a vigilante. That's not what ethical baiting means. Ethical baiting, it's help the ones able to do justice by providing them the information you can obtain. You are reacting to requests and using that entire experience as a warning for anyone else who might interact with the same scammer.
The way Carrie phrases it, she's not playing with scammers. She's just playing along with them, fighting this battle in an ethical way. Still, the battle's hardened her.
For most of my fellow baiters, the scammers are their pets. For me, they are not pets. Pets have souls.
You don't think scammers have souls?
No.
Saying people don't have souls is pretty harsh.
Well, you know, in one of the baits, I pretended to be a terminal ill cancer victim, having money just for my medication to keep me alive. And the scammer was even asking for that money. You have people living on the street because they lost their houses and their jobs after being victims of scams. They don't give a damn about their victims. The victims, it's just an ATM machine for them. Do you believe they have souls?
I mean, I hear that they're doing something wrong, but it's hard for me not to look at other people as also people.
I'm sorry to say it, but someone that will do anything for money, it's at a different level.
Sitting there talking to Carrie, I wondered why scams feel so much worse than other things like predatory lending or shady business practices that also ruin people's lives. And I think it's because of how individual, how calculated, how cold a scam feels, how a scammer essentially smiles in your face while stabbing you in the back, taking not just money, but people's whole sense of self. And so for Carrie to have been scammed and then to interact with liar after liar on a daily basis, doing one of the most thankless jobs on the internet, you probably have to see it as they're the bad guy, you're the good guy. No gray area. I gotta ask, like, why keep up with this? It kind of feels like you're fighting an uphill battle that you're never gonna win, if I'm honest.
Yeah, agree with you. But hey, at least you can try to keep the place clean.
So maybe we'll never reach a world where scammers are done scamming and scam baiters have put themselves out of business. But at least Carrie's doing something. She's dreaming of a better future, putting in work to get there, and taking back part of her life her scammer took from her. Thank you.
right, that is all for our show this week. If you have any thoughts about this story or just want to reach out, you can always email me and the team at uncomfortable@marketplace.org. Also, if you haven't already, you should sign up for our weekly newsletter. There's always really solid recommendations in there for things to cook or listen to or watch. In this week's newsletter, I write about just how expensive it is to fly right now and what that means for my holiday plans, or lack thereof. You can sign up for that at marketplace.org/comfort.
This episode was lead produced by me, Peter Balanon Rosen. The episode got additional support from Prima Reis and producer Alice Wilder. Zoe Saunders is our senior producer. Our editor is Karen Duffin. Mark A. Green is our digital producer, with help from Tony Wagner. Our intern is Kunal Patel. Sound design and audio engineering by Drew Jostad. Donna Tam is the director of On Demand at Marketplace. Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital. And our theme music is by Wonderly. This is Uncomfortable is supported in part by the Cy Sims Foundation, partnering with organizations and people working for a better and more just future since 1985.
All right, we'll catch y'all next week.
On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, "Sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough." This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.